What is going on, everybody? Welcome on into the Heat Check Fantasy Podcast, powered by NumberFire. That is right here on NumberFire.com. And of course, the NumberFire Podcast Network, as we are taking a look back at Week 13 for NFL DFS and letting you know all the big takeaways and what you need to know for Week 14 and beyond. My name is Jim Sonnes. I am a senior writer and analyst for NumberFire.com, joined here as always by Brandon Gadula. He is a senior editor and analyst for NumberFire. Brandon, I'm clearly not doing so hot. The voice a little dead, which is not, it's suboptimal for our line of work. So I could be better. How are you?
Yeah, like I said before on the last podcast, I'm going to try to look up some synonyms to kind of throw out there, because you always ask how I'm doing. And I think a good one this week is adequately, because I had a solid week, not a great week this weekend. But really, overall, I probably should have just been a little more optimistic with that word, because Chris Conley scored a touchdown, and that's really all that matters to me in life anymore.
Good people can excel in football, Brandon, I think is a beacon of hope for us based on what's gone down over the past week. You know, the best football team doesn't always win, as I lost my voice at the Big Ten championship game, cheering on Northwestern. I went in knowing that I would probably lose my voice, but I was hoping that, like, Ohio State would just blow them out so I wouldn't have to worry about it. But then John Moten the fourth or the 15th or whatever has the 77-yard touchdown. They have it a 3-point game in the third quarter. I commit, which is stupid. They played well. I was happy, but my voice is not so much. So apologies to everybody, but thank you for bearing with us. Should be back in tip-top shape for Thursday. And Brandon, it all helps that I get to talk about a Justin Jackson touchdown rush. So you had your Chris Conley touchdown. I got one from Justin Jackson. I think, again, the takeaway is that not all is bad.
Yeah, I was actually going to say, I kind of wanted to defer that Chargers game to you to recap. Yeah. I thought that you would have plenty to talk about with Justin Jackson and Phillip Rivers. And I mean, I'll do my best. I'll try to give it justice, but I don't know if I can.
I'm just going to be a Chargers fan this year, because they have I love Melvin Gordon. I love Justin Jackson, obviously. I'm a big fan of their guards. Forrest Lamp doesn't play. Like, he's been inactive, I think, most games this year. But, like, I still like these guys. So I'm just a Chargers fan. Bolt up, bro, Chachos.
I'm a Chiefs fan now. I grew up an Eagles fan, and then I stopped having, you know, an affiliation because of a line of work. But I'm a Chiefs fan now.
Yeah. So we're AFC West rivals, which means – I don't want to talk to you.
Yeah.
So instead, I'm just going to hand things off and let you dissect what happened on Thursday night, because I'm honestly confounded by how this game went down. The Dallas defense has playmakers. They looked good, and they somehow shut down Drew Brees. What did you see in this Thursday night game?
Yeah, the Saints were on a 10-game win streak that got snapped with a 13-10 win in favor of the Cowboys, so just not many points being scored, and we all obviously know that the Saints have one of the best offenses in football. They weren't at home, but they were still in a dome in controlled conditions. But big reason for this is that Dallas won the time of possession battle, nearly 37 minutes to 23 minutes. They ran 17 more plays than the Saints did. Of course, that all started with Ezekiel Elliott as the focal point. Dallas had 31 total carries. 23 were from Elliott, who had 76 yards rushing. Zeke also had 6 targets for 60 yards and a touchdown, including, you know, some design screens early on, which you always like to see. They're finding ways to get him the ball in space. He's had more than 90% of the team's running back carries this year, 19.4% of the team's targets, 20.9% since Amari Cooper's arrival. That works out to 6.4 per game. Elliott is game script proof. He's pretty much always worth his salary, and I don't think I need to say anything else. Dak Prescott ran 5 times for 22 yards. He's been sort of boosting his fantasy output with rushing touchdowns of late. Didn't score here on the ground, but still 5 carries is nothing to overlook. 24 of 28 passing. Took 7 sacks, though, and threw deep just 3 times. All 3 of those deep targets went to Michael Gallup, and a deep target for us at NumberFire is 16 or more yards downfield. Gallup actually has 10 of the 19 deep targets over the past 5 games and a 17.6% overall target share. 5.4 per game in that split. He's been playing pretty heavy snaps. He had 7 targets in week 13. So he's worth keeping in the back of your mind, but certainly not somebody that we can target in cash games just yet. Amari Cooper led the team with 8 targets. He had 75 yards. He's got 26.1% of the targets since arriving, with 27% of the red zone work as well. You know, he's not tied to the most prolific passing offense, but he's the clear lead option here on a team that really only has, you know, one or two other viable threats in Elliott and Michael Gallup. Dallas hosts the Eagles in week 14. They opened up as a 3.5-point favorite. That game could also be pretty ugly. Kind of, you just never know with division rivals, but especially a team that wants to control the clock and grind things out like the Cowboys do. For the Saints, Drew Brees finally had another dud, which he hadn't really had since some road games early on. 18 of 28 for 127 yards and an interception. Did have a touchdown, but he lost 6.64 net expected points, according to NumberFire's expected points model. Even when you factor out sacks, he just had a 27% success rate overall. League average is about 51%. He had been up above 60% much of the year. He looked almost exclusively to Alvin Kamara, who had 11 targets, and Michael Thomas, who had 8. Nobody else had more than 3, and only 5 total Saints were targeted in this game. Brees had no deep throws after 20 combined in his past 2 games. Traquan Smith here played 85% of the snaps, but had just 1 target or none, sort of depending on the source you look at. But this was his second high snap, 0 target game in his past 3. So he's not somebody we can trust when the Saints aren't at home. And that just leaves us with Michael Thomas, who's got about a 30% post-buy target share. You know, he's really the only thing that resembles trustworthy status among the pass catchers. In week 13, he had 8 targets, just 40 yards, but faces the Bucks in week 14. So I think we can get back on the Michael Thomas train for week 14. In the backfield here, Alvin Kamara led with 11 targets. He led the whole team. He's got a 17.5% target share since the bye, which is 2nd on the team. And he won the snap battle 67% to 40% over Mark Ingram. That's sort of like 65-40-ish split is what we've been expecting each and every week outside of a blowout game against the Bengals. So really, I'm not changing my view on the Saints after this game. Brees, Thomas, Kamara, always in play, especially against the Bucks in week 14. Ingram is a dart when heavily favored. And same thing for the Cowboys, really. Maybe boosting up Michael Gallup, but still kind of the status quo for me on both of these teams.
I wanted to ask you about Gallup because I think that we've seen the Cowboys really tighten that target tree, which is always good, especially on a high-volume rushing team. Like, we want concentrated targets. Gallup, 5, 6, and 7 targets in his past 3 games, and has mentioned a lot of deep looks in there. They're facing a really banged-up secondary next week. So is Gallup now on the radar for you?
Yeah, it's going to be someone that we got to name that price on. And it's really hard because it's such a we know that Dallas doesn't want to throw by design.
Right.
And if they do, they kind of want to throw to Amari Cooper first and then pretty much Ezekiel Elliott. But yeah, I mean,
What is a fair price for you? What's a price that would get you tempted on Michael Gallup?
I don't even know what he was. I guess he wouldn't have been on the wouldn't have been on the main slate. I could go like maybe in that 55 range, something like a Cortland Sutton.
Yeah, that's what I would have said as well. Michael Gallup for week 14 is priced at $5,100, and I think that's really enticing. The Eagles got Timmy Jernigan back, so rush defense may funnel a bit more volume to the passing game. I know the Cowboys don't want to do that, but I think there is enough there with Gallup to use him at 51. Do you agree?
Yeah, and speaking of 51, that's what I have his air yard share at over the past 3 games, 51%, and that'll definitely work against the banged-up defense.
I'll take that. All righty. So Michael Gallup week in week 14. The Cowboys are such a different offense than they were just like a month ago, and I love it. It's awesome. In the week 13 NumberFire Podcast Network free roll, EJ Belair got the win by going superstars in Scrubsy. They had Patrick Mahomes, Christian McCaffrey, and Todd Gurley, and then save cash with your boy Brandon, Chris Conley, Dante Moncrief, and the Patriots defense. With that, they get 3 free months of NumberFire premium and a ton of free FanDuel points to use on entries. To get yourself entered in the Week 14 free roll, check out Thursday's preview podcast. Listen for the URL, which will come after the injuries section for the Week 14 FanDuel free roll. While we're on the topic of free number fire subscriptions, got to announce our winner. Our winner for our contest for the month of December to win Number Fire Premium for an entire year. Now, someone had messaged me on SoundCloud asking if, you know, they didn't have iTunes, if they could submit via SoundCloud. I said, totally cool. And they actually wound up winning when we randomized the numbers here. So Bill Fisher, commenting on SoundCloud, is our winner for Number Fire Premium for an entire year. So Bill, hit me up, jim@numberfire.com. We'll get you hooked up with Number Fire Premium for the next year. And congratulations to you. Another drawing once again at the beginning of January. Let's take a look here at the Broncos and the Bengals, where Philip Lindsay last week had started to pull away from Royce Freeman, and he really did validate that on Sunday with another huge day. Kind of interesting day, though. He had 19 carries and one target, but he turned that into 157 yards, two touchdowns on the ground. But the snap rate did go back down to 42% after hitting 63% last week, which is concerning. But the 19 rushes are still the most he has had all season long, and he has topped 100 rushing yards in two straight and three total games. Lindsay's been one of the league's most efficient backs on the ground all year long, and their offensive line is rocking out. So the target totals will not be high, and the snap rate is concerning, and he's dependent on touchdowns. But in the right matchups, that can work. So I think that Lindsay is trending up in my mind from a tournament perspective, still not a cash game play, but a much better tournament option than he has been previously. And I've liked what I've seen from him quite a bit. Cortland Sutton had his biggest game of the year. He turned seven targets into 85 yards and a touchdown. He's had some pretty tough matchups outside since the Demaryius Thomas trade, but he cashed in a plus spot here. Meanwhile, Emmanuel Sanders, six targets turned into just 19 yards. I think you can play these guys based on the matchups. You can kind of use whoever has the better matchup here, but that should likely be it. They got out front early, and Case Keenum threw just 21 times. So the floor is not great for either guy in general, but I think you can partially predict who will go off, and it'll usually be Manny, but in a spot like the one they had Sunday, Sutton did make sense. Defensively, the Broncos did lose their stud cornerback, Chris Harris, due to a broken leg, and he's been shutting down slot receivers for a really long time now. So this is a major blow to their defense. You will see numbers about how slot receivers do against the Broncos this year, but you have to toss those out the window. This is a downgrade, not just for them against slot receivers, but the entire pass defense. So opposing passing games more in play now against Denver than they were before. And I was not avoiding them previously. I was bumping down slot receivers, but that is no longer the case. On the Bengals side, also some bad injury news. A.J. Green came back, but he went out almost immediately, left on a cart with a foot issue. Kind of have to assume that's going to cost him the rest of the season, and that leads to a significant downgrade for the entire offense. So super unfortunate. Love watching A.J. Green play, but probably not going to see it again this year. That really seemed to hurt Jeff Driskel, who looked terrible in his first start. He had a lot of back foot throws. A lot of it was self-inflicted. It was not just A.J. Green. Driskel's 42 dropbacks resulted in negative 5.29 net expected points against a defense that does struggle on the road and, again, lost Harris during the game. Driskel is not a player we should consider in DFS, especially with Green out. With Green out, Tyler Boyd led with eight targets. Over the past four games, with Green limited or out, Boyd has 22.5% of the targets. C.J. Uzomah is second at 21%. Then you got John Ross at 17%, though. A lot of the looks for Ross have been high leverage looks, close to the goal line and deep down the field. They all deserve a downgrade, but Boyd can still be in play in the right matchups. And Ross, he's a threat to catch a deep ball, so I can understand him. Uzoma will get targets, but he's not really my style of play, given the lack of touchdown upside in the offense. So I rank him Boyd, Ross, and then a big drop down to Uzoma, and I think they're pretty definitive in those there. Green's injury kills the backfield too here. Joe Mixon, 12 carries and two targets. Gio Bernard, he had four carries with eight targets. If they were to be dedicated to just one guy, then that person could be useful despite all these injuries. But that's not the case. So I am fine ignoring Mixon and Bernard going forward because this offense is basically just dust. Brandon, I want to talk to you about Philip Lindsay. He went off in this game there on the road in San Francisco next week, a game where Denver should be favored, and I think they should win. name the price for Philip Lindsay in that spot based on what you see in the past 2 weeks.
So he's getting dangerously close. He was 7,000 in week 13. He's getting close to that sort of stud tier, or like that just below stud tier. And so much as I love Lindsay from a talent standpoint, I don't fully think that I'm confident enough in his overall workload with Royce Freeman there to take some short yardage work away from him. He's getting close. So I want to cap it kind of at like the 75 to 77, sort of like in that Carlos Hyde range, but I have a feeling he's going to be above that. What would you pay for him?
I think, so actually, would you rather Nick Chubb or Philip Lindsay?
I mean, both are very talented. In a vacuum, I would probably still lean toward Chubb.
Agreed. I would as well. Because Chubb seems to get more passing down work and they seem to be more dedicated to him. He's not going to lose as much rushing work. So if I put Chubb in my mind at like 77, 78, I think Lindsay's more like a 73 type guy. And in this spot, he is $7,900. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, I mean, spoiler, Alvin Kamara is 83. I guess we already talked about the Saints, but I mean, it's going to be really tough to roster Philip Lindsay over Alvin Kamara, even no matter what you think about Alvin Kamara, he's 8,300, right. And it's a bit too close for my liking. So I think Lindsay might be priced out for most lineups at least.
But you can still get GPP exposure because he's so good.
And with Chris Harris out, you know, that could increase the I guess that would make him, you know, maybe that would phase him out as a passing back, like passing down back.
Well, it'll phase Freeman out, I think, before Lindsay.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's interesting. I think that he's worth tournament exposure at that price, but he cannot be a cash game play, and he's not a core play for tournaments either. That's correct. The way I would look at it. Let's move on here to the Rams and the Lions. My boy Jared Goff didn't have his best game, Brandon. He kind of struggled, and it was not super fun to see. But Todd Gurley came through, tried to deprive us of those touchdown points again, but thankfully got a second chance and did come through. What'd you see in this game?
Yeah, he just did like the old Madden thing where you just run horizontally across the goal line and try not to score. But
I think Brandon Stokely did that once in a game. It was like a Hail Mary, and he was trying to run out the clock. That one is a little bit different because Todd Gurley's not running out 2 minutes along the goal line. But you know.
Yeah, that's like a Bo Jackson Tecmo Bowl thing. But I do remember DeSean Jackson did it on a punt return against the Giants.
Didn't he like fall over backwards into the end zone too?
I don't know. That might have been a different play, but it was a strange one. But the Rams, I mean, they won. Poured out at the end, 130-16, but it was pretty ugly, pretty close for much of it. Todd Gurley, though, just remains a boss throughout it all. He had 23 carries for 132 yards, 2 touchdowns on the ground, another 5 targets for 33 yards. He has had 6 red zone attempts, so he's up to 61 red zone carries on the year. Nobody else has more than 43. His workload is just sort of otherworldly still, and that's why he's always priced just a tier above the rest of the running backs. And, you know, he's worth the elevated price. It just depends on the value and the spots for the other sort of second-tier backs relative to Gurley. Jared Goff, you mentioned, not his best day, 17 of 33 for 207 yards and a touchdown against the league's 31st-ranked adjusted pass defense based on number of fires metrics. He was just 2 for 9 on deep throws. You know, 8.7 though, deep throws per game over the past 6 for Goff. So he's still sort of pushing it downfield. And overall, the target distribution in this game was pretty typical for what we would expect it to be. Robert Woods led with 9 targets. Then it was Brandon Cooks with just 6. Todd Gurley and Josh Reynolds had 5. And then the tight ends, Tyler Higbee and Gerald Everett, each had 3. In 4 games this year without Cooper Kupp, Robert Woods has 24% of the targets. Brandon Cooks has 22%. Todd Gurley at 14%, and Josh Reynolds now at 13%. Woods has just been very, very steady, similar to just what we've seen from Todd Gurley because this offense is so good. He's had 9.5 or more FanDuel points in every game since week 2. He's got 33% of the red zone targets, 38% of the deep targets the past 2 games. Just a great workload for Woods, and he's way, way, way out of that shadow that he was in under in Buffalo And I just always have to think back to how he was used in Buffalo. Josh Reynolds here ran just two fewer routes than Robert Woods, five fewer than Brandon Cooks. He's been pretty involved, so that's definitely worth keeping in mind when he's tied to such a good offense. So for me with these receivers, I'm good with Robert Woods in cash games and GPPs because he has a ceiling as well. Brandon Cooks is more of just a GPP play. Reynolds still GPP play, and Todd Gurley, just you can play him everywhere. They do play at the Bears in week 14, which is a tough defense, but probably not going to overthink that one too much. For the Lions here, Matthew Stafford had an undisclosed injury in this one. Things have been quiet since that game, so I'm not 100% sure what's going on there, but he's been pretty inefficient for most of the year. You can kind of blame his lack of weapons, the injuries to Marvin Jones, Kerryon Johnson of late as well. But he's had 11.3 FanDuel points per game over his past five. He's had some tough matchups in there, but just really nothing that we can like hang our hats on. 6.4 yards per attempt in that span. Not throwing it deep either. Did have seven in this game, but just you can't really buy fully into this offense, especially Matt Stafford. He did pepper Bruce Ellington, gave him 10 targets, but he had just 35 yards. He had a 3.3-yard average depth of target, which is kind of in line with his usual mark. Ellington's just kind of a running back out of the backfield in this offense, but he just plays out wide. Kenny Golladay caught 3 of 8 targets for 50 yards, had 3 of the 7 deep looks. He's had 10 targets per game in 3 post-Marvin Jones games. That's a 29% target share. 71% of the deep throws, 44% of the red zone targets to Golladay. So, I mean, his elite workload's still there, and it's sort of worth chasing because he's the guy they look to first and foremost. It just really depends on how high his price climbs. In the backfield, LeGarrette Blount had 16 of the 25 running back carries, 4 of the 8 red zone carries, played 41.7% of the snaps. Theo Riddick also had 3 red zone carries, 4 targets for Riddick overall. He played 53% of the snaps, 4 from the slot, 3 out wide, 38 total. So 7 out wide, 31 in the backfield. Interesting usage for Riddick, but I mean, there's only so much we can do. At Arizona next week, I mean, Golladay should face Patrick Peterson. Not much else to love here. Kind of down on this entire offense.
Agreed. It kind of seems like they're tanking, honestly, to be fair. And yeah. The Rams, I think we're status quo on them too. So I think we can move on here to Colts and Jags. Speaking of weird, Brandon, the Colts had been rolling and the Jags were banged up, but their defense came to play here on Sunday. And Cody Kessler, in his first game, kind of was Cody Kessler. He gained 2.19 expected points on 27 dropbacks. Through just 3 deep balls, it was very much a game manager type role. That's what you expect here. That should bode well for Leonard Fournette when he comes back from a workload perspective, but the offense is not going to move the ball effectively with anyone here. They also lost their right tackle, Jeremy Parnell, which means that 4 of their 5 starters from day one are now hurt, which is awesome. Kessler's 3 deep balls were all to Dede Westbrook, who had 5 total targets. Dante Moncrief had 4 targets for 40 yards. I'm not willing to trust anybody in this passing game with Kessler at quarterback because it is clear that they want to pound on the ground. Nothing changed going from Bortles to Kessler, except they got a better quarterback. At running back, Carlos Hyde had 13 carries and 1 target, while TJ Yeldon had 8 carries and 8 targets. If Fournette does miss more time down the stretch, we should be favoring Yeldon for the passing down work. But in general, again, I just hate this offense. Andrew Luck threw 52 times. 10 of those were deep. But he completed just 1 of those deep balls. And I think that's a major deviation for this offense. And I think that there are 2 explanations, and they're both likely at least partially true. The first is that the Colts offense is likely worse on the road and outdoors. The second is that the Jags defense is still capable of being itself more likely at home than on the road. We should adjust our thinking accordingly based on that. I think both those are partially true, and I am willing to buy into that. Eric Ebron had 15 targets in this game. 5 of those were deep. So he's kind of back to the same role he had before with Jack Doyle out. In those games, Ebron has 24% of the team's targets, and he has double-digit targets in 4 of those 6 games. I think based on that workload, he deserves to be priced somewhere around $7,000 or so going forward. So we'll play name that price on Ebron in just a second. T.Y. Hilton got a bit banged up. He left momentarily, but came back in, had a tough matchup, but still had 13 targets. He also gets a target bump with Doyle out. He has 26% of the targets since their bye weekend. It'll likely remain that way the rest of the way. So I like Hilton. Marlon Mack played, but his 8 carries went for just 27 yards. He had one target while Nyheim Hines had 4 carries and 9 targets. And the snaps favored Hines too. He played 61% while Mack was at just 37%. We likely shouldn't trust Mack in tough matchups going forward. And the same is true in spots where they could trail. Hines isn't a great option in negative script, but he will likely play a role. I don't like targeting backs who are dependent on negative game script, but you know, I think this Colts backfield was divided and is getting more divided as we go along because Mack has struggled a bit recently and did have that concussion as well. Brandon, I want to talk to you about Eric Ebron. I think if I'm naming that price on him, I think he's got a workload of a $7,000 tight end. Where do you sit with Eric Ebron heading into week 14 on the road in Houston?
Houston can give up some tight end production. I think $7,000 is probably fair, but I don't want to pay that.
Right.
I mean, Rob Gronkowski was $6,700. I know that Ebron has a better role.
Ebron had 12 more targets than Gronk.
Yeah. George Kittle, I mean,
His offense is terrible. I'm going to poke holes in everyone here.
Yeah, I mean, I would have to say 7,000 is probably fair.
And Eric Ebron is $6,400. That's actually a really good price because it's not going to make you bend over backwards. But like, if you get a wide receiver at $6,400 who has, you know, like he's probably going to get 24% of his team's targets with some high leverage looks, I'll take that. So I think if you view Ebron as being a wide receiver, which he kind of is in this offense, I think that's fair.
Yeah, and with T.Y. Hilton, like, and just this Colts offense overall, I kind of looked into those numbers, and he ran 11 routes from the slot, according to Pro Football Focus, 47 out wide, and of his 12 targets, 7 came against Jalen Ramsey, and I'm not really sure why. He caught 3 of those for 34 yards, two pass breakups.
Yeah, he hasn't worked in the slot as much this year, which is kind of disappointing.
So like, I thought they would just make that change. I mean, smart teams generally do, but that was kind of unexpected for me to see.
And they are a smart team. I view them as being a team that will do the intelligent thing, but they just haven't been using Hilton there as much. I'm not concerned about him, especially next week playing indoors. That should be exciting. Pretty exciting game overall. So I like this offense still. I'm not going to worry too much about that game. Let's move on here, Brandon, to the Bills and the Dolphins. Josh Allen beasting out. We've got Lamar Jackson like on this slate, but it's Josh Allen, the guy who is cashing in from a rushing perspective. What do you see from the Bills and the Dolphins here?
Yeah, I mean, the Dolphins won, but this was like the Josh Allen show. He's had some impressive games, certainly not flawless games, but just using his athleticism. I mean, he's kind of scrambling around, just doing a lot and chucking it deep. He did leave a game-winning heave short to Charles Clay in the end zone, and that would have been a Charles Clay revenge game-winning touchdown. But
Didn't even think about that. Mm.
You always got to think about that stuff. But yeah, Allen ran 9 times for 135 yards. His longest rush was 28 yards. So it's not like he had a, you know, 70-yard carry in there. 28 still a booster, but it's not anything. It's not like he had one huge gain in there. He was 18 of 33 for 231 yards passing, 2 touchdowns, 2 picks. One of those was on a Hail Mary, though, at the end of the first half. Of those 33 attempts, 17 or at least 16 yards downfield. The second most deep attempts of the season by any quarterback. The most was when Blake Bortles threw 18 deep throws on 61 attempts, and Allen got to 17 on basically half of those attempts. 32.5% of his attempts have been at least 16 yards downfield. Among active and qualified quarterbacks, Baker Mayfield is second at 23%. So he slings it, and he can run, and that's not the worst recipe for fantasy success. He's had 26.3 and 30.7 fantasy points in his 2 games since returning. Just don't look at the efficiency metrics, just because they're not good. Never once above average success rate in a single game for Allen so far, but that doesn't always matter if he's going to run the ball for 135 yards in a game. Zay Jones has 6 deep targets here, 9 overall to lead the team. He had 67 yards and 2 touchdowns. 3 other Bills tied for second with 4 targets, including Robert Foster, LeSean McCoy, and Isaiah McKenzie. Zay Jones has 34 of Allen's 191 attempts this season, about an 18% target share. He played 95% of the snaps last week, 92% this week. Had just 1 target last week, though, so certainly not a full-on trend where he's getting every look from Allen. Robert Foster, for sure, exciting downfield. But he played 48.6% of the snaps and ran a route, though, on 26 of the dropbacks. So just not going to play every snap, but is getting, you know, on the field and passing downs. LeSean McCoy looks good, but it's just not enough. He's had 15 carries, 4 targets, 64 total yards, no touchdowns in this game. Just one game all year with more than 12.5 fantasy points. Just 4 total with double digits. It's really hard to look here. And center Russell Bodine left with a leg injury as well. So that's not overly problematic, but it is something to take note. Losing a center is never a good thing. They host the Jets in week 14, and I am not above just sort of risking it with Josh Allen in that game. Miami is just a mess. They ran 50 plays overall in the win. Ryan Tannehill, just 16 of 24 for 137 yards. 3 touchdowns, though. And he's had above average efficiency in his 2 games since returning, with 0.17 passing net expected points per dropback. League average is 0.12. But just 49 total attempts for him in that span. No Danny Amendola in this game, so it's always hard to kind of figure out this offense as it is. But even without Amendola, still nothing that I feel comfortable clinging to. Devontae Parker led the team with 43 yards and 7 targets. Kenny Stills was second with 37 yards and 6 targets. In 2 games since Tannehill's return, it's Parker, Stills, and Kenyon Drake with 10 targets. All a 21% market share for those guys, but just 8 total deep throws, so not really high leverage looks and just not a whole lot of volume. Kenny Stills is still playing a lot of snaps. Devontae Parker snaps were up to 84% in this game, but I can't really feel comfortable with anyone other than maybe Stills for the deep balls. The backfield's gross. Kenyon Drake played 4 snaps out wide out of his 30, played 55% of the snaps overall. Frank Gore was down to about a third of the snaps. They split the 15 carries between them. Frank Gore's got no value. Kenyon Drake still losing enough to Gore to make him have no real value other than, you know, maybe a game script play at best, such as when they play at home against the Patriots in week 14. You know, maybe Drake, maybe Stills could be viable. And Tannehill's been efficient enough that maybe he can come through a little bit for our game stacks.
Let's talk here about Josh Allen. You mentioned he's playing the Jets in week 14. And one thing we talked about last week is that they seem to not want to have him throw. He has thrown fewer than 20 times in, like, I think 3 of his 6 starts this year. And that could be a concern. His rushing can make him viable. But do you think you can stack him with Zay Jones or someone else yet, or would it have to be Josh Allen by himself?
Probably naked Josh Allen is the way to go, but I'm not against Zay Jones. It's just that he still has, hit that 1 target game last week despite playing all the snaps. So,
and people will go towards him this week because he's in the slot facing the Jets. That's kind of like an automatic situation to go at, it seems like, for people. So, yeah, I think Allen's in play for sure. I have concerns still about the upside if they get ahead because they may just not throw ever again. But he's shown enough as a rusher. How high is too of a price for Josh Allen for you to consider him against the Jets?
Probably like 7,000. I don't even know what he was this week, but yeah,
I think he was 68. He's 74 though.
That's pretty high.
I think because of the rushing, he is in play because he is a threat to get 2 rushing touchdowns in a game. I think he's done that before this year. But like, that's still pretty scary. So
Baker Mayfield, 7,500. I don't know.
Against Carolina. I'll take that. Yeah, we'll go Baker. We're good. Speaking of Baker, we'll talk about him in a second. But first, got to let you know that FanDuel has just added a brand new, never-before-seen slate to their NFL offerings. Second half only. That is right. It is half the game, but all the fantasy. Is your team not doing so hot at halftime? Or maybe you know you've got a big win in the bag and want to double down in your lineup? Well, now you can draft a brand new team for just the second half of a single NFL game. So for Monday Night Football, maybe you think the Eagles get out front and go with Josh Adams, or Chris Thompson gets some run with Washington trailing. Whatever you think, define one of these available half slates. Just select the single game NFL game style and look through the slate options. It is just one more way to win on FanDuel again. Second half only contest now available up on FanDuel. If you go to the single game NFL game style and look through the slate options. Let's talk about Baker Mayfield. Not so hot on Sunday for my boy Baker, but the Texans kept on rolling here. 29-13 win over the Browns, largely due to their defense and some Baker Mayfield mistakes. Offense didn't do a ton here. They did not have Kiki QT, so the offense was fine. Deshaun Watson, 6.82 expected points as a passer, above average. I think they need more than just DeAndre Hopkins to have this high-flying offense they have shown at times, so I would upgrade Watson when QT is healthy. Speaking of DeAndre Hopkins, he led the team with 12 targets. He had 12 the past two games combined, and QT played both those, though he also had brutal matchups, Hopkins did. Hopkins had 5 deep targets in those two games. He had 4 on Sunday, so I'm good with Hopkins always, but I think he does deserve a slight bump up in games where QT does not play because Watson basically has to just force feed targets to Hopkins. Demaryius Thomas had a nice game last week, but he has been held below 40 receiving yards in 3 of 4 games to the Texans. 14% of their targets since coming over. I will miss out if he has a big day, and I'm okay with that. Lamar Miller had 19 carries compared to 13 for Alfred Blue. Miller had just 1 target and played 54% of the snaps. He's a pretty touchdown-dependent guy with his lack of passing game involvement. He's really only in play when you think they'll score a bunch of points. So not a huge Lamar Miller fan, but he can be in play if you think they will score. Baker finished the day with 3 picks, lost 5.08 expected points as a passer. That is his second worst showing of the year following their loss to the Chargers. And it does show that he is still a bit matchup dependent, which makes sense for a rookie quarterback on a team that doesn't have great weapons. So handle him as such going forward, but Carolina can be a plus matchup, so consider that. Nick Chubb was a negative script, but still managed to at least not kill lineups. He had 9 carries and 3 targets and converted on a touchdown. He played 47% of the snaps in basically the most negative script you could have faced with a pretty terrible matchup. So I think with Chubb, I'm going to keep the status quo on him based on this one. We knew this was in the range of outcomes. Still came through kind of, so I think that Chubb is still where he was previously. Jarvis Landry popped back up. He had 103 receiving yards on a team-leading 9 targets. Antonio Callaway and David Njoku both had 6 targets in 4 games with Freddie Kitchens as the offensive coordinator. Landry leads in target share at 20%, but then it drops all the way down to Njoku and Duke Johnson at 14%. Callaway's at 13%. Landry has 28% of the deep targets, with Rashard Higgins is at 22% and Callaway at 19%. And Chubb and Duke Johnson are the only guys with more than 2 red zone targets. So there is some juice in this offense with Baker generally playing pretty well, but things are very spread out and not even the high leverage stuff is concentrated. So Jarvis Landry is at the top of the target tree here, but even he lacks a steady floor. So I think that Landry, like, he's going to have bad games because the targets are not there, but he's still my favorite guy here. Brandon, I want to talk to you though about Deshaun Watson. I am concerned about the fact that they don't really throw that often with Deshaun Watson. Seems like they want to keep him healthy, but next week they have a divisional matchup with the Colts. Are you in on Deshaun Watson in that spot? Let's assume Kiki QT does not play.
Yeah, there are other teams that don't want to throw the ball, and that requires an efficient quarterback. The first one that comes to mind is Russell Wilson. I think it's a pretty – someone with rushing upside, deep ball ability. But I think I'd still play some lineups in that game because that could be – that could turn into a shootout with both of those offenses. So I think I could get there. It's just going to depend on his price, and hopefully he starts coming at a bit more of a discount.
Yeah, he's not. He's $7,800, but I think that's about right. Boy. Yeah. But Andrew Luck is 79 in that same game, and he will throw it a bit more.
Yeah, I mean, I much prefer to attack the Colts pass defense than the Houston pass defense.
No, you're right. That's very true. I think the Colts offensive line can hold up there, especially if they get Ryan Kelly, their center back, this week. But it'll be a fun game. It'll be a good one to dissect. So I'm looking forward to that, and we'll talk about that. I'm sure we'll talk about that game on Thursday in the preview podcast. Let's move on here to the Cardinals at the Packers. Mike McCarthy, Brandon, got the pink slip after this game because the Cardinals went on the road and got a win. What'd you see here?
Yeah, I mean, Packers lost this one. Chase Edmonds pilfered two touchdowns from David Johnson. I mean, the Cardinals finally score a touchdown or two, and David Johnson's not involved. So that's very frustrating. But yeah, the Packers, they're kind of out of the playoff race by now at 4-7-1. So I'm actually going to start, though, with that Cardinals backfield because it's certainly worth looking into. David Johnson outsnapped Chase Edmonds 52-13 and outtouched him 21-7, but Edmonds scored both of the touchdowns for Arizona on carries. He had three of the five red zone rushes in this game. That's a bit concerning to me, but I mean, I can't get overly concerned about someone who played only 13 snaps, and it was just more of a Edmonds was on the field and made some good plays and scored. That could lead to more opportunity for him, but until we see that, I'm still kind of treating David Johnson the same. Johnson lined up out wide on five of his snaps, kind of saw his usual workload, but you know, just 72 total yards and didn't score. Can't always bank on this offense to do anything, so it's the same old thing for him. And there weren't enough snaps to Chase Edmonds, if you know what I mean, Jim. Josh Rosen here, I mean...
Come on.
Josh Rosen used to play tennis, and he threw as little as possible again. He was 11 for 26 for 149 yards. 5.7 yards per attempt, well off the league average, almost two full yards off the league average in that. Rosen has just one game with positive expected points as a passer, all the way back in his second start in week four. That's just killing the value of all these pass catchers. Christian Kirk led in targets. He caught 3 of 8. He led in yards with 54. Larry Fitzgerald was second. He caught 3 of his 6 targets for 48 yards. In the five games under new offensive coordinator Byron Leftwich, Fitzgerald has 6.8 targets per game, well above a third of the targets going to Larry Fitzgerald. Christian Kirk's down at about 24%, 6.2 targets per game for him. DJ's at 15.9%. Ricky Seals-Jones, 15%. Just not a whole lot of volume necessarily, and definitely not the value with how inefficient Josh Rosen has been. They do host the Lions in week 14. If that helps, but that total opened up at a 40.5 on most places I saw. Yeah, that I want to like Christian Kirk. I want to like Larry Fitzgerald. I want to like Josh Rosen and David Johnson. It's just so hard.
Yeah. Imagine having it be hard to like David Johnson. What a great year.
Yeah. Before
we move on, I was looking at Rosen's Pro Football Reference page. His full name is Joshua Ballinger Lippincott Rosen. So I'm going to use him next week for that reason.
Oh, yeah. All in on
Joshua Ballinger Lippincott Rosen.
Lippincott. Okay. All right. I like it.
I like it.
Green Bay, I mean, things were rough. And with a new coaching staff, with them out of the playoff picture, I don't know. I don't want to get like overly confident in being able to predict what they're going to do. And that's always problematic for me in DFS. They did lose right tackle Brian Bulaga and right guard Byron Bell to knee injuries here. Bulaga is very good. Bell's not so much, but it's still not a situation that is, inspiring confidence in the Green Bay offense. Randall Cobb, though, did return in this game. He played 61 snaps, which was 80%. And that kind of, threw things off for the tertiary options here. But I'll just start with Aaron Rodgers. He threw 50 times for just 233 yards, 4.7 per attempt. Terrible. Just one touchdown to Devontae Adams. Rodgers was 1 for 7 on deep throws. It was his worst deep ball game of the year. There was wind in this game, but, just a mess of an offensive game for the Packers. Still fed Devontae Adams, which is just the one constant, really, in this offense. Adams had 13 targets, 93 yards, and a touchdown. he's been so consistent. He's had at least 12.1 FanDuel points in every game, at least 7 targets in every game. He's up to a 28% target share on the season. He's got 36% of the deep targets, 45% of the red zone work for him. Jimmy Graham got 11 targets in this game, which kind of came out of nowhere. He had 1, 1, and 4 the past 3 games. His full season target share is 16%, but it's certainly been a bumpy ride for Jimmy Graham. And I can't really get there in DFS, especially because he's had just 3 red zone targets since week 6 and none since week 9. Marquez Valdes-Scantling had 7 targets, but 2 catches, did play 84% of the snaps. So he sort of fended off Equanimee St. Brown, who was a casualty with Randall Cobb back. St. Brown played just 4 snaps. It's kind of a messy situation for the pass catchers now, other than Davante Adams. And speaking of messy, Aaron Jones outsnapped Jamal Williams 39-38. The 51.3% of snaps for Jones, that was his lowest snap rate since becoming the guy in this offense. He had 11 of the 18 carries between them, both red zone carries. Williams did have just 5 touches overall over the past 3 games, so it's kind of hard to understand this and be confident about Jones in week 14 under a new coach. But they do host the Falcons in a game with a 48-point total, so I'm not saying I won't use Aaron Jones, but I'm not saying that I'm not scared.
So I think that Jones was cash game viable in week 13.
I thought that as well.
And like, I didn't use him in my friends mode lineups, because Spencer Ware opened up, and that allowed me to pay up but I thought he was very viable for that. And he was in my original build. Do you think you can get to Aaron Jones in cash or friends mode lineups based on, what we know so far as we head into week 14 for what is like a dream type matchup?
I don't think so, because we can't, I mean, we can say, oh, they're just going to give it back to Aaron Jones. It was just a fluke thing. But I mean, if their offensive line's banged up, their left side of the line got banged up, and then they returned for this game, and now the right side's banged up. So we have to monitor that. But I mean, we can't know for sure that this isn't going to just be a 50-50 split. I mean, we can think that Aaron Jones will have more snaps and more touches, but we don't know that. And I mean, it's a pretty full slate. What, 13 games? I mean, there are going to be better options. So I don't necessarily think that I have to look to Aaron Jones, but I'm going to be, it's tempting still. What about you?
Name that price for tournaments for Aaron Jones.
He's going to still be like at worst 73.
Yeah. I was thinking like, based on what we saw yesterday, I think he should be closer to like 72 ish, but he's 75. I'm still going to pay that in tournaments, because I think that his upside is still stupid.
Yeah.
But like, the floor is just a lot shakier than we thought it was, basically.
Yeah. If you're playing running backs in cash games, you just need to find the players who are like locked into 80% of the snaps. And generally those are just the expensive backs, but then you spend down at receiver because that's just volatile anyway.
And he did still get 4 targets in this game. So that's like encouraging, but it's not what it was before. Let's move on here to the Panthers and the Bucks. The Panthers' playoff chances took another big hit with a loss to the Bucks. But I think the big story for DFS is Cam Newton's shoulder. He threw 4 picks in the day, which was concerning enough. But when they needed to throw a Hail Mary late, they put in Taylor Heinicke in place of Cam to throw it. We saw the same thing earlier this year with the Colts and Andrew Luck, and Luck has been really good ever since then. But Cam was 2 of 9 on deep attempts this week. He had 3 picks on those throws. He's been missing some practice reps due to the shoulder injury too. I'm not saying we have to bail on Cam, because he gets value from other areas, and they have the personnel to beat you with short passes, but it definitely does make him a bit less appealing if he can't spin it deep the way he used to. Cam will also likely be without Greg Olsen for the rest of the year. Olsen ruptured his plantar fascia in his bad foot, and that's not something you recover from quickly, so he's probably done. Christian McCaffrey had just 10 rushing attempts, but it doesn't matter. He also had 10 targets. He's got both a rock-solid floor and a ceiling going forward, and Cam's shoulder injury would not influence too much my views on McCaffrey. Curtis Samuel did pop here, even with Devin Funchess managing to play. Samuel led the team with 11 targets. 4 of those were deep. 1 was in the red zone. Funchess was limited, and he played just 46% of the snaps. DJ Moore played 94%. Samuel played 83%. Torrey Smith is the guy who got squeezed. So the main concern for Samuel's playing time would be getting a healthier Funchess. I'm okay with giving Samuel a look if his price stays low, but it is risky. He had just two targets and no catches last week while playing a bunch of snaps there too, and Funchess' snap rate figures to go up. So maybe Samuel, but not someone you can feel great about. As for DJ Moore, he had eight targets to go with two rushing attempts, two deep targets, one in the red zone. He is the guy here who seems to be most immune to the changing health elsewhere, and he may get a bump with Olsen being out. So I would not worry too much about a slightly down game for DJ Moore in the spot. I'm still good with him. With DeSean Jackson out, Chris Godwin predictably had a great game. He turned six targets to 101 yards and a touchdown. One of those targets was deep, and he had two in the red zone, kind of what he did earlier this year. He did that while playing 80% of the snaps. He is an obvious benefactor if Jackson misses more time, and based on that thumb injury, I think that's very possible. So Godwin trending up. Adam Humphries, though, still managed to be relevant. He led the team with nine targets. Mike Evans and Cameron Brait had six apiece. Humphries got a pair of red zone looks, but Brait, two deep targets. Evans had three. Brait also had two red zone looks. I think Humphries is still in play, and weirdly, Brait may benefit from Djax being out. He had two deep targets all year prior to week 13, and he had maxed out at four total targets. So if Djax keeps sitting, I would bump up both Godwin and Brait while keeping Evans and Humphries on the radar, given how often this team throws. Peyton Barber played 62% of the snaps and had 16 carries, but finished with just one target. Ronald Jones took away four carries as well, and Barber lost a fumble on the goal line. Unless he's in the great spot, not my kind of guy. I think it's just the passing game here, but all of them are at least mildly attractive for sure. Brandon, I want to talk to you about Cam. I get very nervous about health with various players this deep in the year, and I think that the Ravens taking Cam out and just watching that game signals to me that he's not fully healthy. Can you still trust Cam knowing that he's not playing at 100%?
I mean, it's not quite as big of a ding for someone like Cam Newton, as you sort of alluded to, but it's a full slate. We're dealing with no buys anymore. Sure, the upside for Cam Newton is always massive, but if he's not 100%, it's not necessarily there. He hasn't been running nearly as much near the goal line. They've been using Christian McCaffrey in the red zone. And so I don't necessarily think that it's just a situation that we have to force in Cam Newton ever anymore. And so I'm just kind of fine missing out. If an injured Cam Newton goes off, then I'm, you know, it's just something that I have to deal with.
Yeah, they're in Cleveland next week. I think for that one, I'm probably okay not going at Cam because he's not at home, and he tends to be a much better quarterback when they're favored and at home. So I think that's not an ideal spot. And Cleveland's defense is good in general. So I think there I can take a wait-and-see approach with Cam, see how he does, and then proceed from there. Let's move on, Brandon, to talk about the Ravens and the Falcons. This game indoors, a brief concussion scare for Lamar Jackson, but he came back in, and he was kind of the same thing he's been all year.
Yeah, Baltimore won their third straight with Lamar Jackson. Had the ball for almost 40 minutes in this game. They ran 77 plays to 45 for the Falcons, according to ESPN. Jackson did about what was expected of him with his arm, 12 of 21 for 125 yards. No touchdowns, no picks, but ran it 17 times for 75 yards and a touchdown. Did miss about 20% of the snaps due to concussion protocol, as you already alluded to. But, you know, he's averaging 21.7 attempts, 151 yards, 0.3 touchdowns, a pick in his starts, but 18 carries and 88 yards on the ground, as well as, you know, 0.7 touchdowns per game, if you want to, you know, throw that in there. But That's like a running back workload for a quarterback. And if he can get anything generated with his arm, he did miss John Brown on what could have been a touchdown. So I want to sort of factor that in, but until I see it, I'm just kind of factoring Jackson as a, just sort of a rushing option only. But you know, his lack of efficiency and deep ball targets, just really kills all of the pass catchers here. Just 12% of his attempts have been deep. League average is around 18%. And the leaders here in targets actually were Ty Montgomery with 7, and then Michael Crabtree and John Brown with 4. Brown didn't catch any. Again, Jackson missed them on, you know, what wasn't a guaranteed touchdown, but could have been a touchdown, about a 50-yarder. Crabtree caught 3 for 36. Since Jackson started, Crabtree leads with 13 targets, 4.3 per game. John Brown has 4 per game. He's been sort of up and down with his targets. Willie Snead, 11 targets. You know, just can't really go with any of them. If you need to, just risk it with John Brown connecting on a long touchdown. Despite Alex Collins going on IR for the Ravens, they had 4 active running backs. The snaps here were Gus Edwards leading pretty comfortably at 51%. Ty Montgomery with 33%. 6 of his 27 were as a wide receiver. Kenneth Dixon still played 21%. Buck Allen didn't get any offensive snaps. He was on special teams this week. Edwards has 20.3 carries per game, 105 yards per game, and you know, one touchdown and 3 starts with Jackson. Just not a whole lot of touchdown opportunities with Jackson not pushing the ball downfield and also taking away rushing chances himself. Baltimore running backs, though, overall are first in rushing success rate and second in expected points per carry. Since Jackson took over, he's been very efficient, opening up a lot of room for the running backs here. So maybe we can even stack Jackson and Edwards if we want to get all the touchdowns, but it's probably naked Lamar for me until I see otherwise. They travel next week to face the Chiefs. So we get Lamar Jackson versus Patrick Mahomes, and that's going to be fun. For the Falcons, Matt Ryan was pretty rough against a strong overall defense. 16 of 26, 131 yards and a touchdown. His worst game by net expected points of the season. Julio Jones still had his usual targets of 8, caught just 2 for 18 yards. He has 29% of the overall targets this year, 53% of the deep targets. He was 0 for 4 on deep looks in week 13. It's a bounce back spot against the Packers next week, albeit on the road, for Julio Jones. Austin Hooper and Calvin Ridley had 5 targets. Mohamed Sanu had 4. Sanu actually led in routes 33. Jones had 32. And then Ridley and Austin Hooper had 28. Sanu led in snaps as well at 83%. Calvin Ridley was at 64%. So still the situation where Sanu gets more work or at least more snaps than Ridley. But the usual sort of target distribution here, so I can't change my opinion on any of them. It's really just Julio Jones and then maybe Austin Hooper, who is second on the team with a 16% target share. The backfield here, getting pretty close. Tevin Coleman had 55% of the snaps. Ito Smith had 45. Ito had 7 carries and a target. Tevin Coleman had 6 carries and 3 targets. Can't trust either. And again, they play at Green Bay in week 14. So I kind of want to go back to Matt Ryan, even though he's on the road in what could be a sort of weather game.
And also a game where neither team is in playoff contention at this point. So that's always a concern for me. I'm assuming no Gus Edwards next week in Kansas City, correct?
Yeah, probably not.
All right, cool. Just want to make sure we're on the same page there. So let's move on here to the Bears and the Giants. Saquon Barkley didn't score, but he got big usage again. 24 carries, 4 targets, which makes sense given that they won the game here. Saquon has now failed to score in 4 games. In those 4 games, he has 17.8, 15.6, 12.0, and 16.1 FanDuel points. He has a high floor no matter what the matchup may be, and as we've seen, his ceiling is massive when they're projected to score points. So I love Saquon. Odell Beckham, second passing touchdown of the year, but he finished with just 35 receiving yards. 9 total targets, 2 of the 3 deep targets. The one deep target that was not to him was thrown by him, and he had 1 of 2 red zone targets. The yardage hasn't been an issue for Beckham this year, so I'm not super concerned about that. He should still have high upside games this year when he gets good matchups. So I'm still good with Odell Beckham based on this game. As for the other receivers, they did nothing even with Evan Engram out again. Sterling Shepard missed some time due to injury. He had just 6 targets for 28 yards. I'm out on that guy. Failed to cash in for good matchups, and the yardage has been abysmal in all situations. So this team is just Saquon and Odell, which is fine by me. The Bears made a comeback here, forced overtime, but the big story from a usage perspective is Tariq Cohen. He had 8 carries and easily a team high with 14 targets. But those 14 targets included 3 deep targets and 2 in the red zone. According to Next Gen Stats, Cohen had 118 air yards in this game. No other running back has had more than 80 air yards in a game over the past three seasons. Cohen played 51% of the snaps, while Howard was at 42%. Taquan Mizell played 16%. Mitchell Trubisky is supposed to be back next week, but Cohen has 28% of the team's targets with Chase Daniel. He's kind of a guy you could always use in tournaments because the upside is there if they decide to use him in this fashion. So I think that Cohen always very interesting. Outside of Cohen, Daniel also concentrated the target tree elsewhere with only Allen Robinson and Taylor Gabriel getting more than two targets. Robinson had 9 and Gabriel had 7. This means we can likely disregard Anthony Miller and Trey Burton going forward. Robinson didn't get any deep targets in this one, but he has 10 in 4 games since coming back from injury. I will prefer him over Gabriel when targeting this offense, especially once he gets softer matchups. He could be a good buy down the stretch, but clearly I think they'll benefit from getting Mitchell Trubisky back in there for a fun game with the Rams on Sunday Night Football. I don't think there's anything too big to discuss from that one outside of maybe Tariq Cohen. So, Brandon, I don't think we, based on the usage, the way it's fluctuated this year, I don't think that we can, like, trust Cohen. But, like, what are your thoughts on him going forward?
Yeah, you mentioned the air yards, and since 2012, according to FantasyADHD.com, he actually has 3 of the top 13 games by just air yards market share among running backs. And, of course, he certainly hasn't been playing in every season since 2012. So 3 huge games from him from an air yard standpoint. You mentioned the just the huge volume in air yards, not just market share in this game as well. I think that puts him into sort of wide receiver, like low-end wide receiver status. And sometimes I like to compare just a player's, a running back's receiving workload and try to see, you know, how he would line up as a wide receiver in terms of just expected output. And if I can get like 5 to 7 targets from a cheaper running back, that's pretty tempting in the flex. Whenever it's, I'm just sort of guessing a wide receiver. So it's going to depend on his price, of course, but you seem to be pretty, you know, I guess I can't really tell how high you are on Cohen. So I guess the most obvious question is name that price for Tariq Cohen for you in week 14.
Oh, they're not on the main slate. That's right. I think hypothetically against the Rams, I think that sets up as a game where you could use him quite a bit because Jordan Howard's not going to do anything against Aaron Donald and an Ndamukong Suh with Kyle Long out. So, like, I think he would be like a $6,700 type guy there, and I think that'd be fine. Like, he's not a cash game play because we know that they game plan differently. Like, Matt Nagy's very smart, but that kind of takes away the floor from Cohen. So I think, like, 67 is probably where I'd go for him.
He's 65 on the Thursday through Monday slate. So
that's totally fine. What do you think?
Yeah, I'd pay that.
All right, cool. Let's move on here to the Chiefs and the Raiders, Brandon. First game we've seen without Kareem Hunt. What did you see from the Chiefs in this game besides Chris Conley, who is a good human being, doing good things?
Yeah, I mean, Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce are good at football, and they wanted to remind us that even though they had a bye week in week 12. So it's good to see that they came out. I mean, Mahomes was a little bit rusty, but Chiefs won without Kareem Hunt. And replacing Hunt, Spencer Ware handled 14 of 19 running back carries. Damien Williams had the other 5. And all 3 red zone carries, he scored on one of them, Spencer Ware, that is. Ware played 69% of the snaps but had just 1 target, despite lining up out wide 3 times, which is pretty interesting usage to see. That number comes according from Pro Football Focus. The snaps were high enough for me to buy into him at an elevated price, even up from 5,200 that he was in week 13. But it's not quite a, you know, James Conner replacing Le'Veon Bell sort of one-to-one workload here because Damien Williams is still lingering. Williams had 2 targets, both in the red zone. He played about 30% of the snaps. So it is a little bit of a reason to pump the brakes, but Spencer Ware, you know, pretty solid option overall. And again, almost 70% of the snaps certainly helps us buy in whenever he's playing on such a good offense. As I sort of alluded to, Mahomes did miss some throws, including at least 2 touchdown opportunities. One to Tyreek Hill, we sailed over him, and one to Chris Conley as well on the same drive. Both would have been pretty easy touchdowns. Still, Mahomes had 295 yards on his 38 attempts, 7.8 yards per attempt for him, 4 touchdowns. It was actually, his worst per drop back game in terms of number of yards metrics of 0.24 is still two times the league average. He was about four times the league average this week. So he's just elite every single week. Speaking of that, Travis Kelce caught 12 of 13 targets, 168 yards, two touchdowns. He's had 23.7 or more FanDuel points in three of his past four. That is worth noting because we don't want to spend up at tight end, but that's just unmatched production from a, you know, sort of predictability standpoint. And he's actually been the top tight end in terms of FanDuel points in four of the past five games.
How?
He's had at least... He's so good. His workload is so good. And I think that, frankly, paying up for Travis Kelce, I know that it's always scary, but he's had at least 7.6 FanDuel points in every week since week two when the Chargers shut him down in the opener. It's just worth noting that he's been well worth the money if we can get there. Second on the Chiefs in targets was Chris Conley with seven. He caught just three for 25 yards, but did have a touchdown. Since his routes went back up three games ago while Sammy Watkins has been injured, he has a 15.7% target share, and it's been 18.8% the past two games, 7.5 targets per game for him. You know, anyone who listens to this podcast knows I love Chris Conley, but his workload's been pretty solid, and it's going to depend on his price, but he's certainly not someone that we should get overly confident in. Just yet. After two straight weeks of being the wide receiver one, Tyreek Hill caught just one of six targets. He had two incomplete passes on throws of 47 and 51 air yards. So big opportunities. And you know, it can happen with Tyreek Hill. I'm just not changing my view on him at all. He's got 26% of the targets over the past three games. So kind of status quo on Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, Pat Mahomes, all certainly worth it. They do host Baltimore in week 14, but this team has been too good to care too much about the matchup. For Oakland, Derek Carr finally showed some life. He was 29 of 38 for 285 yards and three touchdowns against a pretty solid pass defense. He looked at Jordy Nelson 11 times, who had 97 yards. Jared Cook caught seven of his eight targets for 100 yards and a touchdown. Last week, Jordy Nelson played almost 90% of the snaps, but had just one target. This week, basically the same snap rate, but 11 targets, so don't want to trust him. Jared Cook's actually been pretty quietly good. He's averaged 11 fantasy points since the week 7 bye. He's had at least 7.2 in all but one of those six games, thanks to a 19% target share. And speaking of being quietly good, Doug Martin and Jalen Richard have been pretty solid. Martin's averaged 9.8 fantasy points in those six post-bye games, but maxed out at 14.7. Jalen Richard, 8.5 fantasy points, but on average, that is. But, you know, still 50-50 split. Not worth it to cap your ceiling. But if you're playing, like, smaller slates, it's worth noting. And they do host Pittsburgh in week 14, and they will have to probably chase in that game.
All right, let's talk here about Spencer Ware, Brandon. I think he's the big topic of this. I agree with you, where I liked his usage actually quite a bit, even though didn't quite come all the way through. I thought it was really good usage. So he is at home. They're facing a very tough defense in Baltimore, but he's got a really good offense. So name that price for Spencer Ware in week 14.
It's always hard to gauge just how much he's going to jump up, but realistically tied to this offense, even in that matchup, I'd still say 7,000.
I was going to say 74 because like,
I wouldn't fall in it.
I said $7,200 on Philip Lindsay. And I prefer Ware over Lindsay, so I got to go 74. Like, would you rather Ware or Philip Lindsay?
Ware, although, again, I mean, the offense is fantastic, but Baltimore's defense is just no joke.
Right.
Have you seen his price yet?
No.
Because I just saw it. It is $6,400.
So is he in play for cash despite the matchup at that price?
I would have to think so.
I would agree. Cool.
And then defense I can pay up for matter. Travis. Then I can pay up for Travis Kelce at 8,000.
Oh man, that's worth it. I don't care. Like Gronk used to be that price, and he's not, I don't know if he's better than Gronk, but his usage is better than Gronk. So
he's like, so good.
Yeah,
128, 127 at 46, 99, 79, 95 yards. Like he's just got like yardage floor.
I don't think that players that good should be allowed to be in offenses this good, although he does partially make that offense be that good. So
yeah, well, I mean, they're letting Chris Conley in it, so.
Yeah, I mean, again, he's elevating that offense too. So I am in on Spencer Ware very much so at $6,400. I think it needs to go up more. I think he's a tremendous play for cash. I'm hoping the fantasy output will scare people away because this is too good of a workload, I think, to ignore. Let's move on here to the Jets and the Titans. Never a doubt, Brandon. Marcus Mariota, you know, when I got on the plane, he was at about 14 FanDuel points. When I got off, he came through, man. He finished with 22.58 FanDuel points. Fourth time in the past five games, he has scored 21.8 or more, and he left it half in the other. So I think his floor is high. The question is his ceiling, given the type of game they want to play, but I'm still good with him in general. Like, it makes you nervous, but he's running the ball a bit. He's got some of his guys healthy back again. As long as he's not facing a really good pass rush, I think he's in play. You know, it's not always pretty, but hey, you know. They got Taywan Taylor back from injury, and it spread out the targets a bit. Corey Davis had 7 of 32. Tajay Sharpe had 6, and Taylor had 5. Four other players had at least 2 targets. Taylor had 3 deep targets, and he topped 100 yards receiving. I'd put Taylor second on this list now behind Davis, though he will be volatile given the route tree he runs. He also played just 43% of the snaps, so it'll likely be dependent on a neutral or negative script. As for Corey Davis, he's at 25% of their targets since Mariota's health came back up, 43% of the deep targets, and 27% of the red zone looks. He's still a high leverage target guy, but not quite as much as he was before. Taylor being back may take some heat off of Davis, and I think he's still good, but he's not someone I feel the need to prioritize, especially next week on Thursday against Jalen Ramsey. Derrick Henry had 10 carries and 2 targets, while Deion Lewis had 6 carries and 3 targets. They cannibalize each other. No thank you. For the Jets, Isaiah Crowell pounced back to life with 21 carries and 5 targets. That was 21 of 31 running back carries, though, and on a bad offense, it's not going to cut it. I'm still not digging this backfield. It's too divided and too bad for me to do that. Josh McCown struggled again. Shocker, even with his full supporting cast back. I think that the way I'm looking at the Jets here is it's the same thing as we've seen at the Bills, where Sam Darnold's not great. Neither is Josh Allen. But there's still an upgrade from what was there previously. So I will upgrade these wide receivers with Josh Allen likely, or with Sam Darnold likely back in week 14. Tough matchup on the road against Buffalo, but I think it is an upgrade for the offense. With those receivers, things were a bit spread out. Robbie Anderson had 7 targets. Quincy Enunwa and Chris Herndon both had 6. When they were all healthy with Darnold earlier in the year, Enunwa had around 24% of the targets, but Anderson looks healthy now and was starting to look better with Darnold toward the end of that stretch. I'm probably most likely to use Robbie here, but I think they're all they're worth a look as speculative buys. Again, tough matchup against Buffalo on the road, but I think in general this offense may be better than perception. Brandon, I'm irrational with Marcus Mariota, so talk me through your thoughts on him because I don't think I could judge him fairly.
I mean, he's to me someone who you kind of mentioned like the ceiling and getting excited about like the 22 or so FanDuel points and like that's fine at his price. He was 7,000 this week, but if I go into this knowing that my quarterback realistically just is not going to have any shot at 25, let alone 30 FanDuel points. Like
30 against the Eagles.
Yeah, but that was an overtime game. Yeah, like, would you ever bank on Marcus Mariota getting to 25 FanDuel points and like even the best matchup against like the Raiders?
Yes. He's been very close to that multiple times recently.
So I guess you're just going to block me out and, I just like they don't want to have like give him big usage.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. As long as he's not facing a good pass rush, I think he's fine. I agree that his ceiling is capped relative to other players, so I agree with your overall sentiment. But I think saying he can't hit 25 is not quite
not 20. He can hit 25, but like you're like ecstatic if he gets to 25. Like,
oh, I was not ecstatic that he got to 22. I was ecstatic that he didn't get 14.
Right. That's kind of right. What I'm getting at. But yeah, I mean, I don't love this Titans offense, and I haven't. I don't think I've ever loved the Titans offense in like my 15 years of playing fantasy football.
Yeah, not even Eddie George when he got like 43 carries for like 27 yards.
I want to say Eddie George is like the worst expected points like numbers in our entire database at NumberFire. Teams just used to run the ball for like negative 1 point every play. It was ridiculous.
trying to remember who that running back for the Giants was, who was just atrocious. I can't remember his name. Anyway, let's move on here to the 49ers. You're
not talking about Curtis Martin. He was
no. What? Yeah. Curtis Martin's the best. How dare
like
you?
How long
ago? I have a Curtis Martin plaque.
How long are you talking ago? Like how long ago?
Like a couple years ago, like 2014 or so. There was a guy who was literally like the worst player in our database, and I don't remember his name, but like it was atrocious. Anyway, let's move on here to the 49ers and the Seahawks, Brandon. Russell Wilson does not throw the football, but it doesn't matter, and I don't get it. So, I mean, I get it. I do get it. But, like, talk me through this game here. A huge win for the Seahawks, and Russ just doesn't need volume, apparently, to crush.
Yeah, I mean, if Russell Wilson were, like, in the Rams or, like, Chiefs offense, he would be just stealing every headline. He's that good.
Actually used him properly?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
I can't knock them if they're going to win, but if they're going to score 43. So I'm not knocking them. I'm just saying, use your good players.
Yeah, it was a 43-16 win for the Seahawks, in large part due to a hugely efficient Russell Wilson. That's worth noting that right guard DJ Fluker pulled his hamstring. Sounds like he could miss time, which would be a blow to the pass blocking and maybe to how efficient Russ has been. But I mean, speaking of that efficiency, just 17 attempts, completed 11 of them for 185 yards, but 4 touchdowns. He's had 8 straight games with at least 18.1 FanDuel points, which puts him in like that Cam Newton role in terms of floor of late. Just 25.6 attempts per game in those past 8, but 8.8 yards per attempt, 2.8 touchdowns per game, 25 rushing yards on 4, just over 4 carries per game as well. The problem is with that low volume is just obviously yardage upside, but also just kind of not the best offense to sort of guess at wide receiver production. Now, all 4 of the touchdowns did go to receivers, which helped, but Jerron Brown had 2 of them, and he had 3 total targets for 67 yards. Doug Baldwin had 1. He had 4 targets for 2 catches and 22 yards. Tyler Lockett had 1 on his 2 targets. He caught just 1 target for 52 yards, so it's very hard to get excited. And Jerron Brown, I mean, if you want to think that he might be the David Moore now, he played just 26% of the snaps, so not quite there. He has stolen some touchdowns throughout the year, and that's just Russell Wilson, just he doesn't discriminate. He'll just throw it to whoever's open and score touchdowns. Doug Baldwin has a 20.7% target share in his 6 post-bye games, which is just 5 targets per game. Tyler Lockett's at 15.2% since the bye, 3.7 targets per game. Speaking of David Moore, he had a donut on 48.3% of snaps. His snaps have actually dipped in each of the past 5 games, so take note if you're trying to get creative with your Russell Wilson stack. So, yeah, I just really can't look anywhere, even to Doug Baldwin, frankly, with such low volume and really no dominant market shares. In the backfield, Chris Carson led with a 59% snap rate. He also had 4 targets, which is nice to see, helping sort of keep him in the mix in negative script. But Rashad Penny starting to lurk a bit more. He had 7 carries on 12 snaps for 65 yards and a touchdown. Carson had 69 yards by comparison on his carries. Mike Davis, though, had 4 carries on 10 snaps, so it's just hard to love Carson overall. And not worry in an offense this wonky. Of course, it was immensely positive game script, but we do know that Seattle's the only team that runs more than they pass, so that's always problematic. They do play Monday night, hosting the Vikings in Week 14, so we don't have to guess. We can just sit back and watch Russell Wilson sort of run for his life. For the 49ers, Nick Mullins threw 48 times in a comeback effort, 414 yards, 2 touchdowns. He now has 2 games with at least 22 FanDuel points, and 2 with 12.1 or fewer. So it's been sort of all or nothing for him. Overall, he's averaged 8.2 yards per attempt. In this game, Dante Pettis went off, 5 catches on 7 targets for 129 yards and 2 touchdowns. He played 93% of the snaps after 91% last week. He had 7 targets in each of those games. He's easily second on the team in that small post-buy sample to give this team a little bit of time to look at Nick Mullins and just see what's working. First is still George Kittle, who tied for the team lead with 9 targets. He has at least 8.2 fantasy points in his past 6 games. He's just been the go-to option for pretty much whoever's been the quarterback for the 49ers this year. Other than Pettis, though, the big story for the 49ers is Jeffrey Wilson Jr. He played 72% of the snaps. Matt Breida was limited to 10 snaps overall. just 13% because he hurt his ankle in pregame warmups. And Matt Breida is just made of glass or something. I don't know. But Wilson handled 15 carries, also had 9 targets to tie for the team lead, caught 8 of those for 73 yards. He had 7 carries and a target last week. We're going to need to monitor the news on Breida, but I mean, I don't hate Jeffrey Wilson Jr. if he's going to get, you know, 24 opportunities, especially 9 targets. Of course, it was negative script, but Denver's down Chris Harris now in week 14. If Breida's out, I think Wilson could be viable.
Question for you. Who has more 25-point FanDuel games this year? Is it Russell Wilson or Marcus Mariota?
I'm sure it's Mariota because Russ has just scored like 22 per game every game.
They're tied with 1. So Marcus Mariota is better, clearly. But my thought process on him is that he's always in play for cash because he is stupid efficient and does not need volume to come through. But I think for tournaments, he needs to be in a spot where they will be forced to throw, kind of the Carolina game. I know his output in that game wasn't tremendous. He had 22 FanDuel points, but I think that's like the ideal spot for him. What are your thoughts on him from a game type perspective?
Yeah, every time on Thursday that I'm trying to like write my loves for the week, it's like it's obviously Russell Wilson, but I prioritize tournaments and he just doesn't throw enough to have huge yardage output and he doesn't stack with anybody. So it's more cash games than tournaments, and that's kind of strange, but I'm with you. I mean, I don't love Russell Wilson's upside, but the floor's been so good for him.
Just don't forget that Marcus Mariota's better. Just kidding. Please don't come at me, Seattle fans. I love Russell Wilson. I just need to get my boy Marcus some love in here because he needs it. He needs it. Let's move on here to the Vikings and the Patriots. For the Vikings, it was a letdown for the pass catchers here, but you can kind of understand why. Stephon Diggs had to deal with Stephon Gilmore. He was held to 5 targets. He was also pretty banged up, and Diggs fluctuates a bit based on matchups and on health, so that's not a huge surprise. Diggs' injury allowed them to dedicate more resources to stopping Adam Thielen. Diggs had 10 targets, but turned into 28 yards and a touchdown. And with all the attention on those two, it was actually Aldrick Robinson who had 9 targets, with 3 of those being deep. He played 71% of the snaps, so he's clearly ahead of Laquon Treadwell. Chad Beebe didn't play. He had been playing quite a bit before, so this is still Diggs and Thielen's team. I think Robinson may be ahead of Beebe. I don't know when Beebe will be back, but you kind of have to just judge correctly when to play them based on the matchups, and I'm probably not going to guess on that third option. Dalvin Cook easily set a season high with 10 targets, played 77% of the snaps. That's up from 55% last week. Cook had 9 carries while Latavius Murray had 4, but Cook looked good on his carries. They still seem, for whatever reason, to favor Murray in obvious rushing situations, and I hate it. I think that Cook is in play for neutral game scripts, but I think that's about it. The Vikings defense looked good, but they're a bit banged up in the secondary. Xavier Rhodes is a bit hobbled still during the game. Cornerback Trey Waynes got his 2nd concussion of the year, which stinks. He seems pretty likely to miss next week. I would give a bump to whoever you think will see the least coverage from Rhodes if Waynes does miss time. Patriots got Rex Burkhead back, and it really caused a bigger split in the backfield. James White led with 45% of the snaps. Sony Michel played 41%. Burkhead played 23%. Michel did have 17 carries, but that was out of 34 total for running backs. And depending, I guess, what you count James Devlin as, Michel doesn't get targets. He lost 7 carries to Burkhead, along with losing goal line work to Devlin. So I think Michel's stock is pretty far down based on this game. White had 6 carries and 9 targets, but I'm not into his snap rate either. I think I'm pretty much out on this backfield unless the game script sets up perfectly for either Michel or White. The Patriots took a pretty conservative approach here through the air. They threw it deep just 1 time, and that seems to be a solid plan of attack, but it also led to a weird target distribution. White had 9 targets to lead the team. Edelman had 8 for just 25 yards. Rob Gronkowski had 4. Josh Gordon had 3. I'm inclined to keep those guys where I had them entering because I think it was a lot of a game plan type thing. Edelman can be a cash game play. Gronk and Edelman are decent for tournaments, and Gordon is still going to be a bit more thin as long as Gronk is healthy. So I'm not really a big Josh Gordon guy right now. Brandon, I am out in this backfield right now with Rex Burkhead back. Where do you sit with them going into week 14?
Pass.
All right, let's move on here to the Chargers and the Steelers because, Brandon, a backfield that is far, far more wonderful includes Justin Jackson. What did you see with the Chargers? A nice little comeback win here against the Steelers.
Yeah, Justin Jackson and Melvin Gordon when he's healthy. So you're going to have quite the issue there whenever that happens. But
no,
the
Chargers, it's not an issue, Brandon. Every carry is golden at that point.
So you're just going to hate Austin Eckler is what I'm hearing.
Yep.
Anytime.
I mean, he's fun. He's a really fun player.
Yeah.
I hate him. Really fun. I'm sure he's a great guy. I hate him, though.
So, yeah, the Chargers won after about 14 or so game-winning field goal attempts. Steelers kept jumping off sides. They went 33-30, albeit not without some controversy of some, you know, potentially missed calls. I'm not here to judge. I'm just here to tell you what happened statistically. In Melvin Gordon's absence, Austin Eckler handled 13 carries. He had just 21 yards on those, but 8 targets. He had 11 last week, caught 5 of them for 22 yards. So a bit of a down game for him, just 6.8 FanDuel points, but he played 77.8% of the snaps, which certainly will get the job done in an offense as efficient as the Chargers. Justin Jackson, though, could eat into those snaps a bit with how good he was. So he had a 19-yard catch on his lone target. Also had 8 carries for 63 yards and a score. He played just 14 snaps, 22.2%. But, you know, we're still going to have to prioritize Eckler if we're, you know, playing anyone out of this Chargers backfield. But, you know, maybe neither are sure bets, even though Eckler played almost 80% of the snaps. If Jackson sort of convinced his way into some extra touches moving forward. Phillip Rivers had 2 touchdowns again. He had 299 yards on 36 attempts. 19 went to Keenan Allen, who had 14 catches, 148 yards, and a touchdown. Allen has averaged 19.8 FanDuel points in his 5 post-bye games. He has a 35% target share in that span, 11 targets per game, 42% of the air yards. The only Charger other than Allen with more than 3 targets was Eckler with 8. So it's been pretty much Keenan Allen or bust whenever you're looking at any of these pass catchers, and it remains that way for me. They host the Bengals in week 14. They opened up as 14.5-point favorites in some spots. So I think that's going to be a game that we have to look long and hard at the backfield here, as well as Keenan Allen from a floor standpoint. For the Steelers, James Conner hurt again, and Ryan Switzer, slot receiver for them, is in concussion protocol. Conner has a lower leg contusion, and that could lead him to miss next week. Don't want to get ahead of myself, but in this game, Conner had 15 of 17 running back carries, 60 yards, 2 touchdowns, but, you know, quote unquote, just 72% of the snaps. Jalen Samuels played 25% of the snaps and would be the first man up. You would have to think if Conner does miss against the Raiders in week 14. The Steelers here threw 45 times and ran just 17 times. Ben Roethlisberger had 281 yards and 2 touchdowns, and frankly, no real surprise where those went. Antonio Brown had 13 targets, 10 catches for 154 yards and a touchdown. Juju Smith-Schuster had 9 targets, 6 catches, 49 yards. Vance McDonald, 7 targets, 4 catches, 28 yards. And James Conner had 4 targets for 14 yards himself. Antonio Brown is up to a 26.6% target share, 39% of the air yards. The market share isn't really getting better of late, but he has 13 targets in 3 straight games. For Juju, he's at 10, 17, and 9 targets the past 3 games. He's got a very elite ceiling relative to his price, but still a solid floor generally whenever it's not a blowout win for the Steelers, which certainly could be the case in Oakland next week in week 14.
So you mentioned Justin Jackson and Austin Eckler. In all seriousness, like, I think watching that game, it seemed like they were moving to Jackson more, and that was the case. You look in the fourth quarter, it was 2 carries for Eckler compared to 6 for Jackson, and that was a close game, so it was not like a blowout thing. 3 targets, though, for Eckler in the fourth compared to 1 for Jackson. So I would also assume that Eckler is the first man up here as they face Cincinnati as huge favorites, and I want to target that matchup. But what price can you pay for Eckler, knowing that Jackson did get kind of a scary amount of work at a high leverage part of the game?
Yeah, not only scary, but he was good. And yeah, so he's probably going to earn more, and it's possible that it's more of a, you know, I don't want to go so far as 60-40, but you never know. So for price for Eckler in that spot at home, price, I still want to say 7,000.
Yeah, he's $6,700.
I can live with that. Seven was a bit much for me, but.
And Jackson's min price if you want to have some fun, if you want to boogie. So I think with that, you can make some assumption lineups and say, hey, Jackson earned himself extra time. He was awesome in the passing game in college, and I think there is a route to additional carries. I think that Eckler is out of consideration for cash based on that late game usage of $6,700, but I will still use Minturnas because dude gets targets, and I love that for running backs. And he's a very effective player. So I think Eckler in tournaments sprinkles a Jackson under the assumption that they give him more work. Are you okay with that?
Yeah, I mean, Eckler's had 19 targets in his past two games, and that matters.
He didn't, and one of them he didn't start. So, like, that's awesome. So, no cash games for Eckler, but tournaments for sure. Ware is 64, and I prefer Ware straight up by quite a bit. That is all we have for this week, Brandon. I think that, you know, we're getting down to that point in the season where we need to consider the stakes for a lot of these games, considering various players have at stake, and we're going to see a lot of teams start to shut things down, which could be a pretty interesting. A lot of stuff to track. We got a new coach for Green Bay. It'll be an interesting week. So I think I'm excited for week 14, but there are a lot of moving pieces. So it kind of makes being on your toes more crucial than it is in like week 7 or so.
Yeah. And I think at this point too, we all know sort of who is going to, or who should generally lead teams in targets and carries and snaps. And so I think that there's a little bit more weight we can give to that sort of subjectivity where we say, maybe we don't know what happens with Green Bay's, you know, distribution, and we just sort of stay away from that and try to gain some leverage. Although it's always high risk to do things like that sometimes. Sometimes it's also worth it.
Acknowledge areas where you may not know as much as you think you know. And I think that's going to be key with Los Angeles next week too. Yeah, exactly. That's very true. That is all we have for this week. Once again, don't forget to subscribe to the Number Fire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed. That is on Spotify, iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, the Google Play Store, and the TuneIn app. Ratings and reviews, always very much welcome. We do appreciate it on all of those formats. And we'll be back with you Thursday. You can get that podcast right as it is posted by subscribing. Brandon, if people have questions for you on Twitter, where can they find you there?
I am at Gadula13, G-D-U-L-A-1-3.
And I am at Jim Sonnes, J-I-M-S-A-N-N-E-S. You can also follow the Number Fire Podcast Network at Number Fire Pods, P-O-D-S, as in podcast. We do want to thank you all for tuning in for today. As mentioned, a lot to discuss coming up on Thursday. We hope you'll join us then to break it all down. This has been the Heat Check Fantasy Podcast, powered by Number Fire.